Good afternoon. It's great to be with you. Thought I'd, this has been an exciting and consequential year, so we've got a lot to go through. So why don't we just get with it? In some way, shape, or form, I'd say, since the financial crisis, I've been talking about a slow growth and volatile world, and I think that's kind of the same theory of the case I'd give you today. U.S. is a little bit better. I think everybody had expected interest rates to go up. We're kind of counting on a stronger dollar world. China's not bad for us, to be honest with you. I've been doing five-year plans for a long time in China. This is the 13th five-year plan. It aligns well with GE's policies and strategies, and those tend to be the genesis over time of more growth in China. Everybody can read the resource pricing down, deflationary, has a differential impact on the global markets around the world from Latin America, Africa, Russia, things like that. Lots of geopolitical uncertainty and a lot going on in the world. And I think the only cry out for companies in an environment like this is to be competitive. And so whether it's on cost, organic growth, or getting our own deflation, being super competitive is what it takes, and that's what you're going to get in GE in this environment, and that's what I'll talk about the rest of the afternoon. I am really proud of the GE team this year. We got a lot done. We got a ton done this year. I would say essentially we completed the portfolio pivot. We are executing extremely well on all the plans around GE Capital. We'll have $104 billion of deals closed in 2015. We got Alstom closed. Appliances is disappointing, but we've got lots of alternatives for appliances, and we kind of march on. Our execution has been very strong on the year on organic growth and margins and cash in 2015, so really world-class execution and ahead of our peers. We're returning a lot of cash to investors, $32 billion to investors from a standpoint of dividend and Synchrony and buyback, and we continue to invest in growth and organic growth. So we've got a $300 billion backlog. The GE story has momentum. We're really a leading company on the digital industrial, so we just have gotten a ton done in 2015, and I really want to give a shout out to the GE team who's made this happen. Really a fantastic year for our investors. Now, the operating framework, I'd really say that every metric on this page is equal to or better than what we showed you at the third quarter earnings conference call. So if you look at the industrial op profit growth, still very strong, good progress on corporate costs, good progress on margins, organic growth. As I said in the third quarter conference call, that if the appliance deal closed, that we'd be closer to the higher end of this range. The appliance deal didn't close, and as a result, we have $0.03 of uncovered restructuring. So that'll put this $1.13-$1.20. We'll be closer to the bottom end of the range of the $1.13-$1.20, but still a fantastic performance by the team. We've accomplished this despite having $0.05 a share of headwind in FX and $0.03 a share of headwind in uncovered restructuring. So really a strong, significant year for the GE team, $1.13-$1.20 range, up from an EPS standpoint substantially from 2014. So great job. Verticals will be on track at $0.15 a share, what we told you. On the capital asset sales, as I already said, $104 billion closed, $155 billion of signing. So the team's done a fantastic job from April 10th. Free cash flow plus dispositions will be towards the higher end of that range. The way to think about that is we received a $2.5 billion dividend from GE Capital last Friday for a total of $3 billion for the year. We could get an additional dividend yet this year, and so that's made up for the lack of having the appliance transaction close in 2015. So we still have the upside from appliances still to go in 2016. And cash return to investors of $32 billion, again, above the high end of the range. So When you think about this page that we showed you a year ago and all the ins and the outs that went on in the marketplace in terms of currency and volatile markets and things like that, I think a good execution job by the GE team in 2015. Now I'm going to look forward in terms of how to think about the company, why GE in this cycle, and I'd say three things. One, steady double-digit earnings per share growth in this period of time, 2016, 2017, 2018, with lots of levers, right? You've got Alsem coming in. You've got good organic growth. You've got buyback. We just have lots of levers that really bolster this performance in a slow growth and volatile world. A lot of cash, okay? So let's say $145 billion between 2015 and 2018, in CFOA, Synchrony, additional capital asset sales, things like that, plus an additional, let's say, $20 billion of potential leverage if we run GE like a normal industrial and take on more leverage. So $165 billion, of which really, compared to what we've said in the past in terms of how we're going to reallocate this capital, I'll talk more about it, probably at least $30 billion unassigned. They can go to additional buyback or M&A or things like that. So a tremendous amount of discretionary cash. And then every year for the last 10 or 15 years, we've added new ideas to the GE store. We've added new ideas on growth, whether it's services or globalization. Now what we're doing in digitization and software and analytics from a cost standpoint with simplification, productivity, ways to get more value out of the supply chain, some vertical integration opportunities, and now the digital thread. So we expand the profit pool in the company every year, both from a productivity and a growth standpoint. And so we think that just bolsters, again, in this environment, the operating performance of the company over time. So we feel great about how the company's positioned. So I'm going to just take you through the elements of this in a little bit more detail, starting with the portfolio and capital allocation. So just start high level with the company. Jeff and Steve and the team walk you through kind of the impact of Alsem a week or two ago. So post-Alsem, we'll be about a $130 billion industrial company. Leadership franchises, everything utilizes the GE store. Good organic EPS growth, high margins, high returns. Where we do financing, it's going to help the industrial company grow faster. This portfolio has a legacy of organic growth through various cycles, right? So we've always been a company that's invested in organic growth. We've been able to do this, if you look back over the last 5 years, better than our peers. So we've got tremendous opportunities as it pertains to just sustaining this organic growth. We think that diversification of the portfolio helps bolster performance. So it's sometimes helpful to harken back to times gone by and being at this meeting, you know, 10 years ago, and all I would be talking about was how lousy the aviation business was, right? So between 1999 and 2003, engine shipments down 20% plus, earnings down. And from 2003 to 2015, those earnings were up 3.5 times. And that's because in those cycles, we invested in technology, we invested in customers, we played through, we flexed cost, we made strategic investments. And the same thing happened in the power cycle, the Affordable Care Act, and now we deal with oil and gas. So businesses cycle, our contention is that our diversification gives you more consistent performance that ought to be valued in the cycle we're in today. And we have the potential to continue to generate high returns with this set of businesses. I spent the early part of my career in GE Plastics. GE Plastics used a lot of capital, right, as a percentage of revenue. These businesses don't inherently use the same level of capital. So when we run them the way we should, this has potential to be a high return portfolio. So leadership businesses, organic growth, diversification matters, potential to continue to grow returns. That's a nice way to think about the company and where we stand. in this cycle. Now, awesome. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this page because I think the team did a great job of going through, you know, where the earnings and the earnings accretion was going to be in terms of the Alstom synergies. And so you see the walk from 2015-16 all the way to 2018. I completely believe in the strategic rationale of the deal. You know, fantastic opportunities. We see new and different ones every day. It took a long time to get done, and anytime you go through that, the business is going to suffer. We set the bar at the right place in terms of how we think about the sustaining business and where the synergies go. And we haven't counted on any growth synergies to make our numbers. And when Steve and Russell and Jerome turn the calendar again in 2016 and their incentive comp plans, Alstom synergies are prominent, right? So we've been able to walk through this and really get the Alstom integration kind of on the field, and now we have to execute. Keith and the GE Capital team have had a fantastic year. When you go back to April 10th and think about everything we've had to do this year, I'd say most of our execution is a year early. We've closed a lot. Synchrony, I think, has been a fantastic trade for our investors. We only have about $50 billion of signings yet to go, so we know what we need to get done in 2016. Dividends in 2015-16, what we're counting on, and then the rest will come in 17 and 18. Like I said earlier, we had a $500 million dividend in the first quarter this year. We received an additional $2.5 million last week, so that's a total of $3 million. And we still think there's a good chance we'll get an additional $1.5 billion this year, and still do $18 billion next year. So that's our kind of our expectation in terms of how this is closing, what's happening with GE Capital, and where we stand. Like I said, Synchrony is complete. The pricing is on track that supports the $35 billion number. I talked about where the dividends will flow. We plan to apply for SIFI designation in the first quarter of 2016, so that's another big deal, and we're really on track to return the $55 billion, which is the $35 billion from the GE Capital shrink, plus the $20 billion from Synchrony back to investors. So that's the game plan in terms of where we go. And then that's going to leave us with a financing business, industrial financing business, which helps support industrial growth, less than $90 billion in E&I, double-digit returns. That's kind of the GE Capital going forward. So again, I think a fantastic job by the GE Capital team, and thanks to Keith and all the leaders that are here today for everything they've done. Oil and gas, you know, is a tough neighborhood right now. So I think when I sat here last year, there was a lot of uncertainty, both in terms of the market and how we would execute. I think what we've demonstrated to you this year is that we've been able to execute pretty well through the cycle so far. So the team, Lorenzo and the team, will have organic operating profit that's flat to up slightly for the year. So they've really been able to achieve a lot. And we've talked about next year being down 10%-15% of both revenue and operating profit, and that's still about as good as we can call it for next year. There's still stress in the marketplace in terms of customers' CapEx and things like that. But I would remind you that the reason essentially that we got in the business wasn't to time pricing on a barrel of oil. It was that we could see consolidation, technical intensity in the industry. So we still think our competitive advantage in the industry is quite strong. So we'll do more than $1 billion of cost out over 2 years. We're launching lots of quick customer solutions in the marketplace in terms of where we'd go. We're hiring good talent. You know, in this cycle, we found it to be a good opportunity to hire good people into the company. And we'll be strategic and opportunistic as it pertains to the oil and gas business. But our core assumption and our core, let's say, the way we're running the company is organic first. And we think there's lots of opportunities for us to grow the oil and gas business over time just by executing better and driving hard on results and continue to outperform in this cycle. Look, appliances, you know, we didn't expect it to necessarily happen the way it happened, but our underlying business did a good job this year, so our execution is good on operating profit growth and revenue. There's significant inbound interest. We've had a bunch of people that are ready to kind of step in and pursue this. I expect it to happen relatively quickly. I can never predict exactly. We put on the page smoother regulatory process expected. It would have to be. I think that's. I remember when I used to work for Jack, I used to say, I'd call out a person and I'd say, this person's really better than you think. And he'd say, he'd have to be. So the regulatory process is going to be smoother next time around, probably. And look, I just think this is, we're going to sell this business, we're going to march on, and we expect this to happen pretty expeditiously into the new year. And then capital allocation, we talked about $145 billion, which is CFOA, capital dispositions, things like that. And we talk about an additional $20 billion of incremental leverage that's possible for the company going forward to have what I would call an industrial balance sheet. We're going to keep investing in organic growth, P&E and technology and things like that. We want to sustain a good dividend yield, right? So that's always important to a lot of our investors. We're going to return the $55 billion back to investors and from GE Capital. And that leaves capacity, let's say, that can go into incremental buyback, depending on how the returns look or M&A. And look, I just think we have the luxury to be selective and extremely disciplined on where we go, and the capital is going to be allocated to the best returns. And the extent to which we do M&A, it's going to be bolt-on. The synergies are going to be obvious. It's going to be additive to our EPS goals. The market upside is going to accrue to GE investors, and we're just going to be smart about it. So I think the good news is we have lots of cash that we can kind of be thoughtful about as we go through this cycle, and that's what we plan to do. That's how we plan to act, and that's what we'll do. So I think from a portfolio standpoint and capital allocation standpoint, what I would say is a fair amount of portfolio stability with the tail end of the execution on GE Capital and lots of incremental cash to allocate as we go through this cycle. So GE story, right? What's our competitive advantage? How do we think about our competitive advantage? And the way we think about the GE story is how do you make size and breadth an advantage and not a disadvantage, right? That's the way, that's the context that we have for the GE story. This is how we kind of talk about it internally, which is the benefits of size. And that has to show up in share. It's got to show up in speed. It's got to show up in lower cost. And each business around the horn adds to the GE story. Each business draws from the GE story. And we have lots of scale initiatives like the Global Growth Initiative led by John, the Digital COE led by Bill, our Services Council, the GRC led by Vic Abate. And that's really how we think about the company. And what it should mean for you is value of size, right, has to drive competitive advantage in technology, customer value, globalization, talent, structure. And that in turn has to turn out to be world-class metrics, right? So the only reason that we should think this way is that at the end of the day, our organic growth, our margin rates, and our returns should be better than our relative competitors in the industries we're in. And in this cycle, I think it's all about how do you drive incremental growth because it's, again, there's not going to be massive tailwind for anybody. How do we get more value out of the supply chain? And how do we utilize Alstom or how do we leverage Alstom and drive the GE story and get benefits from the GE story as we think about Alstom? And so that's how we think about the company, how we run it, where we are in this cycle. So again, it starts with technology, right? We continue to invest a lot organically. The $10 billion includes what we're doing in R&D, what we're doing in CapEx, what we're doing in digital, right? So we are reinvesting back in the company. And we continue to drive scale advantages around technology, systems integration, efficiency of structure. We own our global design. How do we drive fast works? How do we get more NPI? And in this cycle, from an investor standpoint, we're launching big systems. So when you look at LEAP, the H-turbine, the Tier 4 locomotive, these are big systems that are going to be around for a long time. And we have to execute those extremely well. Then every business has a pipeline of NPIs. I think with fast works, we've been able to get more products out faster. Then we have a pipeline of about 10 or 15 organic growth plays that fill competitive gaps or allow us to penetrate new markets. I put on here the advanced turboprop, right, which is we just got our first launch customer. We'll get half the funding from European governments as we go forward on this. This allows us to drive incremental profit. So you need to have all these levers that you can pull to drive sustainable organic growth. We invest a ton of money in manufacturing now, manufacturing technology. So I would say if you went back 5 or 10 years, the vast majority of our investment would be just in new NPIs. Now we invest a substantial amount of money in supply chain and technology. And this goes for edge devices, productivity devices like controls and robotics. There's a materials revolution underway that GE is in the lead of. And whether it's CMCs, which go into jet engines, or gas turbines, or silicon carbide, which is going to go into healthcare and power conversion, we're making tremendous progress. And from a manufacturing standpoint, GE is going to be the biggest practitioner, if not one of the biggest practitioners, of additive manufactured coatings and things like that. So a lot of capability. We bring the technology thinking when we think about Alstom. This is a page that Joe Mastrangelo showed you in the Alstom presentation. Historically, in a combined cycle gas power plant, GE would have 30% of the content. GE plus Alstom now have 70% of the content of a combined cycle power plant. That not only gives us more revenue pull-through, but allows us to harmonize the way that we think about efficiency, the cost, the project cost. So these are some of the hidden synergies we're going to get with Alstom as we continue to proceed over time. Services and globalization have always been something that we've talked about and thought about. Services has been a big driver of incremental growth. This is a big part of how we underwrote the Alstom investment. With Alstom, we've got a $210 billion backlog, high margin, high organic growth, with lots of opportunities to continue to drive value with Alstom plus GE. Lower cost position, the ability to do non-GE products, the ability to continue to drive great customer outcomes. So the service franchise is the strength of the company, and it continues to be very valuable. And then globally, we're in 175 countries around the world with big backlog. About in excess of 60% of our revenue as time goes on. Good historic growth rates. And here it's going to really be about China and the next China five-year plan, which fits GE very well. More localization, more infrastructure needs. And again, GE plus Alstom in China, Latin America, Africa, India, makes us at scale significantly bigger than our competitors. So it gives us a very strong competitive position when you think about the company and our position going forward. So these have been very important, steady opportunities for us and will continue to be so as time goes on. Now, from a service standpoint, we continue to use the Service Council to drive initiatives. Some of the key growth initiatives we have right now are driving share in some of the old installed base. So we've taken things like advanced gas pass or some of the things we've done in F turbines over time, and we're taking them back to the Bs and Es, where our share is lower. So we basically think GE plus Alstom puts us in a much better position from a cost standpoint to go back over more market share in the aged installed base. Asset performance management, which are some of the simple diagnostic tools, are helping our service businesses grow organically. Our healthcare business is having some of its best growth recently in terms of its ability to convert data and analytics into revenue. A tremendous productivity pipeline in services. So we continue to drive upside in terms of where the productivity flows through. And I just show one example, field engineer productivity. So we continue to drive services as an evergreen in terms of profitability. And this, again, is 70% or 80% of our profit, and it continues to be great investments for us and give back as time goes on. This, again, is a chart that Paul McElhinney went through in the Alstom presentation, which shows the impact of Alstom in terms of its fit with the power generation team. It grows the installed base by 60%. It adds to the backlog and our ability to grow profit over time. It really allows us to leapfrog and good opportunities and coal upgrades, good opportunity to continue to drive costs and productivity. So this, again, is a big portion of how we underwrite the Alstom investment and I think well-positioned for the future. And then you have to be aggressive winning business around the world. Big gas turbine businesses available in Indonesia, places like Pakistan, where the H-turbine is doing well. We received a $2.6 billion deal for the India rail business. We're building a $100 million-plus franchise for bioprocess manufacturing in China. We've developed the technology to do low-cost drug manufacturing in some of the emerging markets around the world, which, again, can leverage our global growth organization. In oil and gas, we've been successful on gas-to-power operations and driving better synergies and operations for some of our customers that have been under stress because of the oil price. LEDs, we're doing big projects in Sao Paulo and Dubai that are big LED project operations. And in aviation, we continue to globalize aviation with customer centers in the Middle East. We're well established on the COMAC product line and things like that. So you got to go where the business is. The business is out there. There's enough business for us, and we continue to drive that kind of performance as time goes on. And the last piece I talk about on growth and somewhat on margins is just new ways to think about internal GE solutions. I think with Alstom, we have the opportunity to improve internal sourcing, what we call GE to GE. So, for instance, on the balance of plant activity on the combined cycle of power plants, we have significant opportunities on EBOP and things like that. So we'll double the internal consumption GE to GE. There's tremendous pull-through opportunities for grid products with gas turbines. About 75% of all the gas turbines that Siemens sells, it pulls through grid. At GE, that number is 5% today. So we just haven't had the product line that we now have with Alstom. We think that's worth about $2 billion in incremental orders over the next few years. The financing operation is much more aligned today with the GE industrial assets, not just with the verticals like GECAS, but really digging in harder with the healthcare business, the oil and gas business, which is fantastic. And look, we remain the biggest clean energy company in the world. We launched EcoImagination a decade ago. It's $34 billion of revenue this year. We're well positioned in energy efficiency, energy transitions, renewable energy. So we're well positioned as any of these energy transitions take place. GE has a good solution for how those go. So that's maybe, let's say, the growth portion of the GE store. Now, cost. Alstom is going to add opportunities for us to continue to drive cost out and margin. So it's about $110 billion, let's say, cost stack. We still have a vision to grow gross margins 50 basis points a year to get SG&A down long-term to 12%, hopefully lower. Corporate costs under 2%. We've got $3 billion of Alstom synergies in the deck that we're going after. What's going to drive that is lower product cost, the ability to capture deflation, more supply chain value, leaner structure, and digital thread. So we've got good cost-out projects. And what I thought I'd do is kind of walk you to the, let's say, the traditional GE core from a margin standpoint through the integration of Alstom and just let you see what the numbers will look like. So on the left-hand side of the chart, it basically says in 14, from a segment standpoint, a corporate standpoint, that was 14.2. So we're showing this with corporate, because that's the way most of you build your models and most of you think about the company. And we're going to give you a transparency on all these levels, so gross margin, segment profit. You're going to have all the data you're going to need. So 15, we said we're going to get 17% margins by 16. We're going to get 17% margins 1 year early. So we expect to achieve that in 15. Corporate 2, So roughly, let's say, 80 basis points of improvement year over year in 15. Now we go to 16. You know, you start at 15. Our organic, let's say, core margin growth is going to be up 50 basis points, let's say, for planning purposes, both growth in both segments and corporate. Alstom is going to have a negative impact of 100 to 150 basis points when you think about just lower margin businesses, bring them in. So that's going to set the bar at 14 to 14 and a half with Alstom going forward. And then we're saying start there in 16. we're going to get 200 basis points between 2016 and 2018, getting the Alstom integration. Probably slightly more than half of that is synergies with Alstom. And then our core margin growth will continue to be 50-plus basis points a year. That's how you think about a walk from where we were to where we're going to be once we integrate Alstom. So I want to spend some time just going through that arithmetically because now that Alstom's in the run rate, and we'll show you all the various pieces as we think about that. What drives it? We got to do a better job on product cost. If you look at, let's say, historic margins on product, they've been, let's say, 8-ish% over time. They're 5-ish today. We just have to do better as we think about how do you drive product cost. We've done a good job on service margins. This, I think, is our opportunity to really make a difference. We are driving this one hard. The power team is doing it with catalog pricing. They're getting a ton of cost out of their products. In aviation, it's all about learning curve. Look, I review all these engine launches on a very regular basis. When I look at the dashboard for the LEAP, it is so much better than the dashboard for the GEnx in terms of how we're approaching the learning curve, how well prepared we are for the LEAP launch. So that's how aviation makes the difference. With healthcare, it's all about doing a better job on the supply chain. So that's how healthcare gets its product costs better. And in oil and gas, it's all about product structuring. How do you take the cost of the total system down, make it more economical for the customers, and still have great margins for us? So we are driving product cost extremely hard, and that is important for the company going forward. Now, the way you do it is we're really, I think, upping it a notch on deflation. We're going to kind of go into next year targeting about $1 billion of deflation. We're increasing our low-cost country sourcing because that is an opportunity in those economies is to get lower cost on source products. So that's going to be a key lever that we play. And another lever that we've already started pulling and are going to continue to pull is in our supply chain, get more value out of the supply chain. $30 billion of what we source is products we design, parts we design, where we own the designs, we've driven the engineering, and we just choose to outsource it, right? When we do a should-cost model on the difference between what we pay and what we think it should cost, there is big opportunities there. And so over the years, we've started to evaluate kind of make-buy analysis. That's helped us source better. It's allowed us to look at some components that we might think about bringing in-house. It just gives us more optionality. So as we're driving product margins harder, there's just a ton of opportunity to source better and think through good make-buy equations. And you're basically underwriting your backlog at that point and your ability to drive the engineering and technology. Now, aviation has already done a lot of this. Aviation has created a series of joint ventures. The Avio acquisition gave us depth in gears. So aviation has kind of proven the point that there are going to be opportunities for us to make smart investments at high returns. So these so far have been high-return, margin-accretive investments that also help us with our long-term service revenue stream in terms of how we think of the world and where we're going. So a ton of opportunities, we think, in terms of product costs and product margins that are really smart going forward. And we continue to make good progress on SG&A, driving SG&A costs down every year. We've gotten $2.5 billion of costs out of SG&A since 2011. That's above our plan. The challenge we've had is that the oil and gas revenue has been lower than we initially thought. So that's the difference between the 12 and the 12.8. But this continues to be a very robust initiative inside the company and the one that we're going to continue to push very hard. We've got a shared services organization that's well underway with a target to get 65% of our processes in shared services. We've done a lot of restructuring, and we'll continue to apply any gains we have back to restructuring. We've done a lot of investment into our ERP systems to simplify the structure. And as I said, our goal for corporate costs is to be under 2%, and we'll achieve that next year. So a leaner structure, a better structure, and one that we think is well-positioned to continue to drive earnings growth into the future. So That's the store in action, right? The GRC is driving materials technology through the business. We've been able to grow our life sciences business 25% per year outside the United States by leveraging the Global Growth Organization. Great financing capability, GE2GE, GE4GE, 65% of our processes across the company in common, driving cost out, power conversion being pulled through in terms of systems integration. So we continue to drive these opportunities that again, for you, lead to better organic growth and higher margins. And that's how we think about the GE store. One of the most important elements that will change where we are in the GE store is going to be a focus on becoming what we call the digital industrial. And this is something we've been working on for 5 years. We've been talking about for probably 3 years, and we're making some real progress. So start at a higher level. When I talk about digital industrial, I really talk about it on three levels. I talk about it on the impact of smart machines, more sensors on machines across the board, and with IT systems that integrate from GE through customers through the ecosystem, and the benefit of having more sensors and better integration of IT systems is going to allow for more systems productivity. Better productivity for us, better productivity for our customers. Level one. Level two is as these sensors and systems generate more data, those data is going to be turned into applications, both hardware and software upgrades. This is going to go to our customers achieving what we call the power of 1%. If you can generate 1% fuel performance on GE's installed base of jet engines, that gives our customers $2 to $3 billion of profit every year. Small changes mean a lot. It's all about the data. And the way we play this one is by getting more value out of our CSAs, both in terms of price and lower cost, incremental software sales, and better collaboration with our customers. So that's how you play level two. Level three is there's going to be an operating system that sits on top of the products, that's going to take the data off the machine. It's going to be cloud-based, industrial strength, cyber-protected, that's going to be able to go into an oil field or on a locomotive or at a railroad or at a hospital to pull data off of ERP systems or other systems, and that data can then be turned into applications or better performance. That's the cloud-based operating system. And that's here the value is going to be partner value, incremental growth, better performance on the apps, better performance on the product. One, two, three. Our direct competitors are all going to do number one. Some will do number two. So our direct competitors will all do number one. Some will do number two. There'll be horizontal companies that do number three. Some will do number two. We're the only company that's going to do one, two, and three. So we're the only company that's going to have the machines, the analytics, and the operating system. And that's how we're playing the industrial internet. Now, why us? Why us? Why can we do this? I'd say the first element is there's a need that's not being filled, right? If you look at industrial productivity, this is not GE, this is the whole society of industrial companies had 4% productivity from 1990 to 2010. The last 5 years is 1%. So what it's really proven is that information is nice, but without data, you don't get outcomes. So you have information-rich, data-poor companies. Let me tell you, I still go see 10 health hospital CEOs a month. They've all installed electronic medical records. They're all sitting there saying, what have I done? Right? I have information. I'm not. My productivity is no better. My patient outcomes are no better. Right? So data matters. Data matters. 1 mile of velocity for a Class 1 locomotive in the United States is worth $200 million in margin. So their ERP might help them. A general ledger might help them, but an operating system helps them a lot. So there's an unmet need that we can fill because we have the data. And if you look at the right-hand side, this is today about physics and analytics. So this is about taking assets down to a level of one, no more fleets. It's about combining physics of how products operate, how they wear out, how they change over time, and adding the analytics to it. So we think we have, let's say, a home field advantage in the industrial internet. So why us? Because there's a need, and we think we can play it uniquely.
That's why us. So between how we invest in San Ramon, a lot of you guys have seen that, building downstream organizations, what we're investing in our own digital thread, it's about $1 billion a year. This is not incremental. This has really been reallocated. So we've invested this while taking corporate costs down, while taking our margins up. This is in the run rate. This gives us the chance to play and be at scale. And here's what we're getting. We're getting total digital revenues of about $5 billion this year. That'll be up strongly double-digit next year. Productivity in the digital thread of $300 million, which will be up strongly next year. And we've launched Predix in the second half of this year. Predix is going to have 200,000 assets under management, 100-plus G applications, more driven by customers and developers, 20,000 developers, and 50 partners. So we're on the field. We're competing well. We're competing hard. And from an investor standpoint, what this should lead to is a higher market share of our products. It's going to lead to higher organic growth of our service business, better margins of our service business, and it's going to lead to value as the industrial internet continues to take off and continues to play. So we believe that this is really not, you know, not something that we count on every incremental dollar in the way we think about the company, but it's something that over time, I think we can prove to you that this is going to be extremely valuable and a long-term, a great play for the company. So here's a locomotive. It's a rolling data center. If you have the control, you really have the heart and the brain of the locomotive. The team's developed a series of applications. This is a $500 million business. It's growing 25% a year. It's primarily sold as freestanding software. Some of it goes through CSAs. This is a fantastic business. We're now rolling this to be able to put some of this on non-GE units. So we're looking for opportunities to expand this with our customers as time goes on. Here's the oil and gas playing field. Lorenzo's business, it's $400 million, growing 25%. Mainly, this is software. This kind of demonstrates that we have a product plan that we basically run. And kind of what I'd say is that Bill, we run this kind of as a software business inside the company. We've kind of rolled our IT resources and digital resources and have combined those. And so this is the kind of playing field. We're not going to develop every app ourselves. We're going to have other people that write applications in the system, but a good long-term growth of the product and services as they grow. This healthcare at the RSNA this year, the biggest launch we had was to take and have a cloud-based imaging system that customers could access. We've always worked on post-processing imaging inside the hospital. This allows it to be lighter and lower cost for our customers. It also opens up for more applications to be written by our customers or other partners as time goes on. So this is really going to be a race to see who develops this the fastest in terms of the healthcare cloud. Power has been very successful in both digital wind farms and digital power plants. This is kind of software-defined machines with controls and user interface and software. More than $2 billion in revenue, growing 30% plus a year. So tremendous both margin and revenue growth in the power business, and this, we think, has continual opportunities to add applications to it and more progress inside. So that's the power business. We showed you this as part of the Alstom integration. Alstom had a software business about the same size as the GE software business. Together, they're about $500 million. This is a massive market in grid automation, so good opportunities for us to continue to grow digital industrial as well. So good momentum in that business. And then we're also driving the same applications inside the company, what we call digital thread, which is more investment in applications in engineering and manufacturing, supply chain sourcing and services. We're going to have Predix inside GE, so Predix will both be outside the company and also inside the company so that we can write applications in manufacturing and sourcing and services as well. So this is going to grow inside GE and be a big driver of productivity. So if you think about model-based engineering and brilliant factories, This is going to allow us to get the H launched faster and lower cost. We're going to hit run rate on H and record levels, right? A lot of this is driven just by the fact that we've been able to digitize the entire product and drive it right through manufacturing. 75 Brilliant factories, which are really sensor-enabled. This is going to lower downtime, improve productivity. One of the key payoffs is a sourcing data lake. So basically, we now across the company could load everything we buy into one data center so that you can easily go between aviation and healthcare and pull together the commodities, and then digitizing the way our field engineers work. So tremendous productivity across 30,000 field engineers. And then the ability to do engine-by-engine models versus fleet models when you have a CSA, this is going to be billions of dollars of productivity for our service businesses. So, look, I just think every year it becomes a little bit more apparent that this is a leadership position for us. Services growth, product share, services margin, and incremental software on upside. Already in the run rate, we're not saying to you this is going to be incremental investment. What we're saying to you is this is in the run rate. And so I just think this creates upside, right? As time goes on, if the market unfolds the way we think it's going to unfold, this has got some real juice in it. So that's the digital industrial company. And now just shift gears and talk about 2016. So here's the framework for the year. We're talking about $1.45 to $1.55, organic growth of 2 to 4%, growing margins on the core. Corporate being between $2 billion and $2.2 billion, Alstom at a nickel a share, a restructuring equal gains. At today's rates, this is 2-cent headwind from FX, right? So we're going to do this despite having the 2-cent headwind, high teens industrial tax rate, free cash flow dispositions of $28 to $31 billion. This assumes that we get all the way to the $4.5 billion from GE Capital in 2015. And get $18 billion in 2016. The appliance disposition is all we're really counting on next year, and CapEx of $4 billion. And then $26 billion coming back to investors. Really what we're assuming right now is $8 billion of dividend and $18 billion of the GE Capital funds going into a buyback. So this is kind of the framework, let's say, for 2016 and where we stand. I'm going to go through each segment individually, so you can kind of see the left-hand side and see the segments. I'd say what makes it better? Does the U.S. Get better, right? What's the Alstom integration? I'd say digital revenue, better cost out, timing of the G. If we get more of the G capital dividends early in the year, that probably allows us to incrementally buy back more earlier in the year, so that's helpful. What goes to the lower in the range, you know, really just continuous, even worse than we see today from an oil and gas standpoint. We're launching a lot of big products. We're launching the H, Leap. You know, I'd say I was quite encouraged with the Tier 4. The Tier 4 locomotive has been, really flawless so far. I should never say that, Jamie, because the lightning, just when you say that. Stronger dollar, you know, we're kind of thinking through what do we do if you get an even stronger dollar and what happens if China, you know, and has an impact. So we've tried to think through the what are the pluses and minuses from a risk standpoint. And then on free cash flow conversion, we're trying to get up a couple points from 85 up into the high 80s next year, and that's the goal for the team, and that's going to be reflected in people's metrics. So that's kind of the framework for the company in 2016. So power, you know, again, I'd say for Steve and the team, this is really about Alstom integration, and this is about getting the H kind of launched down the learning curve, operate well. They're going to have, you know, strong revenue growth because of both what's going on organically and what's going on in, with Alstom. And earnings will grow as well, and I would say margins will be flattish to maybe down slightly for this business next year. You know, there's business out there to be had. You know, gas is still the favored technology. If you ever got a real conversion in China towards more natural gas, that's important. But, you know, I was in the Kingdom. I was in Saudi about a month or 6 weeks ago, Demand for electricity in Saudi is still growing 10% a year. That's really what dictates where the long-term market size of a business like this goes. We're going to break renewables out separately. Jerome, who I think you talked to on the phone, is going to run this business. Jerome is a long-term Alstom leader. It's kind of a different market cycle. We're going to make sure that it's seamless in front of the customers, but a lot of it's driven by public policy. There's a sense that the production tax credit as part of the spending package, I think, Jeff, looks like it's going to get a multi-year look. That's the U.S., but really everywhere around the world. This business is globalizing. We're going through another product shift to do an onshore product above 2 MW. We got to get that launched and into the run rate. That's the key challenge for this business this year. Again, we're going through an Alstom integration onshore, bringing hydro in, things like that. That's the renewable challenge and opportunity. Energy Management's led by Russell. Energy Management is really about continuing to improve the business. This is a place where the markets are going to be okay. We can do a lot better in this set of businesses. Alstom gives us scale, certainly in grid. We think we've got good momentum and execution in the Energy Management business, and this should continue in 2016 as you think about this business. We got to grow margins and have good opportunities in this business. Aviation, great backlog, unbelievable backlog, good service strength. Military, you guys can read every day, military's been challenged, certainly in this cycle, so we're not counting on any upside there. It's really in terms of, it's all about the LEAP. Like I said, I think the dashboard I look at on the LEAP in terms of the performance of the engine and just the amount of preparation that's gone into the launch from a cost standpoint, I feel good about how we're positioned. It's showtime this year, and again, we think this is a business that even with the LEAP is going to be able to grow gross margins and grow margins for the year. That's aviation. Healthcare's had a better U.S. market. It's almost been a flip-flop. Emerging markets pulled it for a long time. Now the U.S. is better, and the emerging markets have slowed down. The life science business is super strong. A ton of variable cost productivity that John's working on. I'd say that's the biggest opportunity for us to do better in the healthcare business, and that's where John is really focused. Then it's a lot about what happens in the growth markets around the world in terms of where the healthcare business goes. We expect low single-digit organic growth margin expansion in the healthcare business next year. Transportation has really executed like a champ this year. They've had a great year on the product side, good service revenue growth. You're going to see a slower North American market next year, both in terms of car loadings, but we also ship a boatload of the Tier 4s this year. It was kind of an unnaturally strong year this year. It'll be more of a normal year next year, and mining is challenged. Okay, the wheels business is super tough, and Jamie's challenge is really just navigating the cycles. This is a business that's always done a pretty good job of navigating cost. The upside for the rail business is global. The India rail deal is huge. We're looking at a huge opportunity in Russia. We're looking at incremental opportunities in Latin America, and that's really what we have to do to continue to grow the transportation business. Appliances we plan on selling. Again, I think you've heard me say that at least five outlook meetings. We plan on selling appliances, so maybe one of these years I'll be right. That's our plan. Lighting, we're really transitioning lighting to see what it can be. You guys, when you own GE, you don't know it, but you actually own the world's best LED business, right? We actually have, in this old lighting business, we've actually had the LED business that's growing the fastest in the world. What we've done is we've spun that into a new business called Current. We've added to it the ability to do storage and solar and a whole bunch of other things from a C&I standpoint. It's going to grow rapidly. It's going to have an opportunity to do PPAs and financing and things like that. I think this is a way we might be able to create some incremental shareholder value as time goes on, is just participating in this growth market using really what has become a fantastic business inside of this core lighting business that's going through transition. Capitals are going to be roughly flat year-over-year. That's kind of what we've said to you, and that's what our expectation is. Again, I think the GECAS business is in good shape. they're going through their own oil and gas cycle in terms of assets and valuations and things like that. But I think this, the notion of being able to have a smart financial service business that's really aligned with a fantastic industrial business, there's actually value there, right? So we're going to keep the E&I down, focused, but I think there's incremental value in terms of industrial growth by being really smart about how we finance and we plan to use the business that way. And then, you know, our plan is to have gains in restructuring offset next year. We'll take corporate costs down again next year. You know, we say between $2 and $2.2 billion next year. So we continue to make corporate smaller. We've redeployed what the funds into the digital COE. We've got a lot of shared services now, much more than we had 2 or 3 years ago. So this is going to continue to go down. So that's kind of the, let's say, the tail of the tape as it pertains to 2016, the puts and takes. And, you know, we've tried to think about scenarios and what could happen and, you know, just get ready for another year of slow growth and volatility. That's kind of how we see 2016. So just to wrap up, why us? Good EPS growth, double-digit EPS growth with lots of levers, okay? Buyback, organic growth, margin expansion, Alstom, EPS growth. Lots of cash, okay? So we generate cash, GE Capital's returning cash. We've got the opportunity to lever the company like other industrial companies, lots of cash. It's going to be very intelligently reallocated to generate shareholder value. So EPS, cash, and a full suite in a slow growth world, a full suite of initiatives that can just drive that extra point one way or the other on cost down or growth up and are well established and in the run rate. So technology, services, globalization, digital, vertical integration, sourcing, supply chain, productivity, YGE, right here. The walk, okay? So this is more or less the same chart. I think the first time we showed this was on April 10th or shortly thereafter. It basically says you start where you start this year. The buyback produces good results. Alstom, we have to execute and generate synergies. And it doesn't take a lot of organic operating profit growth industrially to get you above $2, right? It's just arithmetic. So that gets you above $2, and then you have an additional $20 billion that can be used to generate accretive M&A or buy back shares. So that's how you think about the company's valuation going forward. We start our next leadership three-year plan, what we call a long-term incentive plan. That goes from 16 to 18. And what you see on this page are what's going to be in the metrics. So if you are a GE leader, you're going to get paid on cumulative EPS. So are we generating the 16, 17, 18 EPS that drives the walk? We're going to be measured on world-class returns and margins. So are we generating the kind of world-class returns and margins? And we're going to be paid on, are we generating cash and are we returning cash to investors? So we are aligned, right? We kind of leave this year with a plan, compensation, well established, and that's how we run the place. That's how we're going to run it. That's what the team is here to do. So just to wrap up, you know, a little bit on culture. I think having a stable portfolio in a company where everybody knows exactly what they have to do, that's valuable to you. Okay, that is valuable to our investors, number one. The second thing I'd say is to run a good industrial company, it takes balance. It takes organic growth, productivity, and cash to return. We've got all three of those in place in the company right now. You've heard me, I think, talk about the culture of simplification 3 years ago here. It turns out that a better company to work at is also a better company to invest in, right? So I just think speed, less layers, more shared accountability is a fantastic place, and I feel much better. We're not where we want to be, but much better about the GE team. I'd say the benefit you get in owning GE in a cycle like this is you actually have an industrial team that's lived through the financial crisis. So I would say a tested team, right? Almost no matter what 2016 is like, it's better than 2008 in the financial business. And I think that you've got a tremendous, I'd say, a team that's grown through that from a scenario planning standpoint, a contingency standpoint in terms of how we think about the company. And we like to win in the marketplace. I think a very externally focused culture and team that wants to win in the marketplace. So we feel good about how we're positioned. I'm really proud of the GE team and the hard work they did this year. I know a lot of you are probably burning up. It's just, is it hot for you as it is for me? I'll take some questions. Scott, I'll start with you. So warm in here, guys, don't you?
Yeah, this reminds me of last year where it took 364 days to thaw off, and now we're here back here redoing it over again.
Well, it's 60 degrees outside, so you want to see winter somewhere, don't you? You live around here?
I think these Comcast guys just don't like you, and they're blasting every bit of frost at you they can. Jeff, you have a lot of balls in the air. I mean, you've had huge product launches the last several years. I mean, the Tier 4 engine and locomotives, you got aerospace, you got power with the H-turbine and such. And you didn't talk about R&D explicitly in the presentation, but are we past this big phase of investment and spend where now we can get a bit of an R&D dividend, if you will, where investment comes down? I mean, there may not be a new aircraft engine announced for another seven or eight years, right? And H-series is.
Yeah, I think the answer to that's yes, Scott. In other words, I think we had to make a choice in 2009-ish, let's say, on the aviation cycle. And that was not a fun time to have to make that choice, but we made the choice. And the fact is that we're going to launch the GEnx, the LEAP, and then the 9X, and then we might have the turboprop or things like that, but nothing of that size. So I think the same thing in power gen, the same thing in the locomotive business. So yeah, I'd say the days of the biggest, let's say these big mega projects, that's more on the wane.
Okay. And as a follow-on, the world seems to have changed a bit. Even in the last couple of weeks, we've seen high-yield spreads widen out. And I mean, volatility, as you mentioned, is high, but there's shorter cycle companies that are peers of yours have seen pretty big order declines. I mean, what do you make of the macro backdrop? I mean, the Fed just raised rates today, and it seems to be rather, I'm not going to call it ill-timed, but I guess I will call it ill-timed. Don't quote me. This is John Inch from the press. I don't want to get in a fight with Janet Yellen over a webcast, but nonetheless, it seems to be an oddly timed rate increase given what's going on in capital markets and such. I mean, what do you make of the macro backdrop out there?
Not so fair. It's because you read it every day. I think, Scott, I don't think macro so much anymore. I think micro. So when I look across GE, I'll go kind of segment by segment. So I'll start. Oil and gas is clear, right? So that's pretty clear. We don't see any kind of short-term declines in aviation. Still seems pretty strong. Power is more, I would say, about energy transitions than anything else. You see kind of gigawatts flat to up slightly, Steve, something like that, even today. Healthcare, the U.S. market's better, but the emerging markets are worse. So healthcare is kind of on a cadence all its own. Transportation, tougher, driven a little bit by idiosyncratic kinds of things in terms of natural gas shipments and things like that. Global trade for us, China's maybe organically up slightly for the year. So we see China's okay. So I think, Scott, it's just U.S. is slightly better. Growth markets are slightly worse. The markets tend to be more micro than macro in terms of how you think about it. I certainly don't think it's going to be a super robust economy, but we don't see, you know, when we look at orders and stuff like that, we don't see a big macro slowdown. We think it's more explainable by micro than macro. Okay. Jeff, we'll go to you.
Thank you. Jeff, on the incentive, it's interesting, the notion of not only cash generated but cash returned. Are you formulaically going to lock yourself into some kind of, you know, return metric that's going to tie your hands on M&A?
You know, I think, Jeff, what we're going to try to do is be smart about, you know, where the stock price is, what the returns are at the time, things like that, where the dividend should be. So I think we're going to be smart about it, maybe a little bit flexible about it in terms of what are the best returns. But we think it's a – I think the message I'd give to you guys is we've kind of built our plan based on organic growth fundamentally. We haven't built it based on doing a lot of deals. We've got a big execution lift, even for GE on Alstom, that's going to be focused. So that's the way I'd have you think about it.
And then separately on the guide, just how do we think about appliances in the guide? So you're going to have half a year or a year of appliance earnings plus the gain, right?
So the way I would think about it, Jeff, is half a year of earnings, all of the gain going to restructuring. So we plan to take all the gains and keep, you know, we still have restructuring ideas that generate a good return. We're going to keep doing that. Okay. Yeah, Steve.
Takes me a while to hold the mic because of the cold, sorry.
Shaking.
Yes. So, listen, on the $30 billion of unassigned that you're just talking about now, you talked about it intelligently allocated, but what kind of time frame are we thinking about for that? And are you within whatever the M&A profile looks like, are you looking to do more Alstoms or more of some of the secular growth stories that you used to do more of?
So, I mean, Steve, what I would say is the way to think about to a certain extent is, you know, the dividends are really going to be gated by how quickly Keith closes, right? So, my brother, going strong, and then SIFI de-designation, right? So I think to a certain extent that gives us more flexibility as you think about, you know, kind of leverage and things like that, even though that's more to do with the rating agencies, that's how I think about those. So we'll know a lot more when we're here a year from now than today. But I think on the capital side, that ought to be coming as quickly as we get the cash back from GE Capital, right, on things like buyback and things like that. And then, look, I just think bolt-ons are you know, kind of the right way to think about the company. We've got big, good platforms to reinvest in. And that's what we plan to do, and we can compare it to organic growth and things like that. So that's how I think about it.
And then this is you keep evolving the digital thread and digital industrial company story, and now we're at the point where you're starting to give us both ways to monetize it or think about how you're going to monetize it, including putting, I think you had a $500 million or $500 million number on there for internal productivity. So how we're, you know, if this is the next leg of significant earnings and cash flow generation for the company going forward, how are you starting to think about the sort of fuller, broader monetization of this from a shareholder perspective?
You know, here's what I would say, Steve, is that we haven't locked ourselves into any specific way to think about it. Again, the way, if I was sitting in this room today, I would think about it in terms of ways that you understand. You know, what we try to do is tell the story in a way you can understand. So you can you know what another point of service organic growth is worth, and you know what incremental margin dollars are worth. And so if I was sitting there today, I would think about this first and foremost as incremental service growth, incremental productivity driven by the digital industrial. And then there's a whole nother layer on top of that that says true software opportunities, if you have the operating system that sticks, right, what are going to be the opportunities that go with that? Those are things you can, those are things we think about. That's the capability we're building. But what we've tried to do so far is tell our investors, just put it in the simplest terms that you can help us think through monetization, but keeping lots of opportunities open to the future. Okay? Yeah, Cliff.
you've got Cliff Ransom, you've gotten pretty good at understanding my questions when I word them inelegantly.
And believe me, that's a real trick.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm an early convert on this Internet of Everything, but I don't really yet understand when it has a meaningful impact on the GE portfolio. Is it a 2-year, 3-year, 10-year horizon in terms of earnings? And that, and it goes really specifically to what you just talked about, that second layer of the world opening up to you beyond the obvious.
So, you know, Cliff, again, I'd come back to it. It's a derivative of what Steve asked for. You know, guys, this is going to happen, right? So this is not something that you know, we've kind of ginned up. I was here when we launched Six Sigma. Believe me, that was a lot more bizarre than Digital Industrial was, quite honestly. This is actually out there. People are practicing it today. It's going to happen. We're in the front seat because we know the verticals, and we have a huge installed base, Cliff. So I come back and I'd say right now the way to think about it is incremental service growth, better margins, right? That's step one. Step two is going to be bigger software opportunities and bigger operating platform opportunities, either inside GE or with partners and things like that. That's a discussion for next year. For the future, let's say. But we don't know. There's going to be people that win the operating system battle. It's going to play. I would say this is going to happen slower than what happened on the consumer side, right? When you think about what happened on the consumer internet, this is going to be slower. But there's going to be opportunities for industrial companies to play here, guys, because the knowledge of the assets is more important than the knowledge of the systems. And that's going to play. Yeah. Hey, John.
So, Jeff, the long-term drivers that got GE to build its oil and gas business, it strikes me that those drivers are as good without the cyclicality in healthcare. It's a business that, you know, you obviously ran, and GE hasn't really done a lot of M&A in that space right over time, and I know many people even speculate it would be something that you'd want to perhaps spin out. I was thinking the opposite. Are you thinking personally of maybe renewing some of the BD activity in healthcare? Why or why not?
We like healthcare. You know, so if you think about healthcare today, it's really four businesses. You've got a life science business that actually is a killer business. I mean, the organic growth and margins are fantastic. You've got a device business, which is monitoring and ultrasound, which is fast growth and high margin. You've got a core diagnostic imaging business, which has been a slow grower, maybe flat, where I think the big challenge is incremental margins in terms of variable cost productivity and things like that. And then you've got an IT business, and the choice we've made so far, John, because believe me, we've bought some things, is to do more organically on the IT side, you know, than acquisitions. And we can always debate that, but we think that's maybe a better pathway long-term for the healthcare business.
Then just thinking out in terms of the digital industrial, should we be expecting, once this fills in more broadly, should we be expecting M&A as part of building out the platform?
Yeah, look, I would say the way to think about this, John, is we will take equity stakes in companies. I think you could see us do bigger partnerships with bigger IT players as you think about this. But one thing you won't see is a big IT acquisition. I can guarantee you, you're not going to see that, because the graveyards are filled with people on that one, right? So I think equity stakes, small deals, capability deals, big partnerships. And then, you know, the way this thing's going to work is we want people like Tata and things like that. We want them writing on Predix. We want people out there that are partners that are writing their own applications on Predix. Yeah, Julian.
Thanks. I was intrigued by your comments around portfolio stability being, you know, crucial given GE sort of in the middle of its biggest ever divestment. So maybe what should we read into that comment? Does it mean that further large divestments are kind of off the table for now?
Yeah, you know, kind of that. You know, so we're going to run the play on capital. We're going to integrate Alstom. We're going to be smart about what else is going on out there. But I think from our standpoint, this steady walk to 18, that is capital allocation, organic growth, Alstom integration, that is very value, digital industrial, that is the best value accretive play for our investors. That's, you know, it's not that we're not going to do anything or things like that, but we think that is the play to focus on, to run, and I think that's a valuable play. You know, guys, think about the last couple of years coming in here and saying, okay, we're 50% done with the pivot. We're going to start the pivot. We're going to do this. That's a hard pitch. This is a really clear pitch, right? This kind of says, here's what the team's measured on. Here's exactly what we're going to do. And if you think that the team is as dedicated to execution as you want us to be, you should own the stock. But there doesn't need to be what if kind of digestion. And if we're as good as we think we can be on digital industrial, this is really going to take off, right? But that's what, you know, that's what we're trying to say.
Got it. And then on the product margins, you talked about how they're, you know, several hundred points below the historic level. When you think about, you know, how you got here, how much of that would you attribute to GE-specific factors versus competition or the
external? I think it's more mixed. You know, in other words, my view is we haven't done as good a job as we should be doing in terms of our own supply chain and our own capability to do better. I don't really think it's so much pricing or things like that. I just think we can execute even better than what we've done. Yeah, Nick.
I was just curious today, you didn't really speak too much about the, I guess I'd call it the secret sauce for your base infrastructure. There's a large demand for that, almost insatiable, in many parts of the world where there's a lack of financing. And I would be curious on your insights as to the advantages GE has in helping to arrange and structure project finance with third parties, as well as what you might or might not see coming forth from the recent climate agreement with 195
the recent what, Nick?
Recent climate agreement.
Yeah.
That 195 countries, which also includes some assistance with regards to financing for many of these non-developed countries that actually pledged to switch over and away from fossil to renewables.
So I think a great question. Demand for, there's still a third of the world's population that doesn't have electricity, right? So when you go and see us, Steve and his team and Glory, places like Islamabad and places like that, that's what they're fulfilling. Financing tends to be the secret sauce in a lot of it. What Jeff and Keith have done have really taken people from EFS and capital markets, people from GE Capital, and we've deployed these people globally. So we've got a leader in London. We've got capital markets people in every corner of the world, and they're, Nick, basically arrangers. So these guys are looking at XM financing, OPIC financing, Power Africa, JBIC, and that is a key differentiator in the infrastructure market today, particularly places like Africa, Eastern Europe, other places. Hey, guys, look, we also have a fantastic partnership with Chinese EPCs. And so on One Belt, One Road, right, where the Chinese government finances development, frequently this is a Chinese EPC with a GE gas turbine. So we work those angles incredibly hard. On the climate stuff, Nick, I'd say these things are really hard to predict. The one thing I would say, the one thing I always think in the back of my mind is gas and wind, it's going to be a gas and wind world, right? So if you can be positioned as these transitions take place, with a good gas turbine product and good wind turbine products, that's going to be, those are going to be the products of choice from a power generation side early on. Shannon.
Yeah, thanks. I want to dig in more on this product margin effort. Power and aviation still are now going to have sort of big product launches ahead of it. I know the big R&D, hurdle is cleared, but, you have the introductory pricing, initial ramp. How are you going to be able this time to grow margins in those businesses despite that? I mean, power, I think you said flat to down this year, so it's got the H coming in. How do we get past that on power, and why can aviation still grow margins despite product launch?
So I would say, Shannon, on aviation, so you've got GNX coming down the learning curve, so that gets better every year. LEAP kind of steps in. Everything I see so far says the LEAP execution is going to be pretty good. You know, again, you start at a higher point, but the learning curve gets steeper and down faster. Steve is going to introduce the H. You know, the H will step in year one higher, but it gets lower faster than any launch we've ever done. And then you have service margins improving. You've got SG&A costs coming down. You've got a bunch of other things that are happening. But, you know, we still expect aviation gross margins to increase next year even with that. So I think it's just really, you know, we've gotten better at launching the products. On the incentive plan, one of the, so we basically have four metrics in each business. A lot of businesses, I'd say more than half the businesses have, in 2015, had gross margins as one of their four metrics, right? Pavlovian, right? Every business that had gross margins as one of their AIP metrics hit it. So 2016, everybody's going to have one, right? Not that dumb. So I think it helps. But you know, nonetheless, I always look at these product launches as risks as well, because they're hard to execute. So I didn't think we did not execute GNX, for instance, all that well. So we kind of took the lessons learned from the GNX and applied those to the LEAP, and we feel a little bit better about that.
And is H really the main weight on power margins in 16?
Yeah, completely.
So 17 all sequels should be.
So I think H creates a little bit of headwind in 16, but like I said, I mean, one of the things we're learning from Steve and his team is they really are going to have the steepest learning curve cost reduction of any major launch we've ever done. So that's something we're trying to get from power to spread in through the rest of the company. Yeah. Yeah. I already hit you. I got to go Chris in the back.
Thanks. Jeff, you mentioned no real tailwinds for anyone, and I wouldn't quarrel with that at all. Just calls to mind looking at the figure, $5 billion plus in restructuring over the past 3 years. How do we think about the kind of rolling payback on that, what's contributing in 16? And is that kind of a normal kind of three-year pay-as-you-go rate for a company your size now as we think about GE in the future?
You know, Chris, I hope not. You know, again, I think that's a lot of restructuring to do, so we ought to be getting more efficient. It's still probably as high or the highest returning stuff we do. I don't know, Jeff, if you'd add anything to that. Yeah. So it's an 18-month payback type of thing still? Yeah.
Yeah, from a capital allocation perspective, I mean, the returns on the restructuring we've done has been phenomenal. And the execution within the businesses on delivering the paybacks, and that's part of the reason you've seen the margin expansion that Jeff showed you over the last 3 or 4 years is the payback on that restructuring. And it's a critical step in improving the competitiveness of the company from a product service cost perspective.
Normalized run rate?
I think it's going to be hard to tell. Really, I think what I'd like to do is kind of keep it in line with gains unless you get something really extraordinary that I don't see right now. You know, we look at all the stuff that Lorenzo's done this year. I mean, we've got a fundamentally lower cost structure for the oil and gas business like a lot of people do. Yeah, Dean.
Thanks, Jeff. Interesting hearing more about the next chapter for GE Capital. So once Keith and team deliver on the $50 billion remaining assets, once SIFI's removed, you've got the verticals. And just what's the growth plan for those? And I think you touched on it a bit in the prepared remarks where you said that you've got a growth strategy, but we'll keep E&I down. So is that going to be a ceiling? What are the metrics, what are the gating factors, and what are the opportunities
so,
longer term?
You know, the way I think, Dean, you know, the way we kind of think about it is let's get to the 90 first, right? Let's go through the de-designation process. Let's see how the world's working as it pertains to financial services and things like that. I think the shift I would make in investors' minds is it's really as much today about how we use it to position our industrial growth as it is necessarily as freestanding. You know, again, we have good risk principles. We'll have discipline on returns. But that's the way I would think about it going forward. And we see no need to be bigger, okay? So we just think there's ways to continue to manage the size as it pertains to, and we like having it, you know, in the percentage of earnings and things like that where it should be when you think about 2016 and beyond. Yeah. Andrew.
Just back to macros, you travel around the world and you said you were in Saudi. How do you gauge the impact of lower commodity prices on businesses outside of oil and gas, i.e. Saudi public spending would be a great example, right, because it would hit your healthcare business. What are you hearing from the politicians?
So I think, Andrew, it's highly differentiated based on how well prepared the countries are for, you know, for what's happened. I would say in the case of Saudi, it impacts the let's say the funding of the national treasury. It's going to impact the way that they invest outside the country for sure. But you still have 10% electricity load growth. You still have an initiative by the new crown prince to build out the healthcare sector. So I think once you get under the covers of what the macro is, you start digging into each country being differently. So I would say in the case of our business in Saudi, still pretty good. Angola, different, right? Angola benefited massively from oil up. It's going to have a tougher scenario with oil prices down. You know, in every country's more or less some derivative of how well prepared they are, what are their needs, and do they still have enough on their balance sheet, or can they finance it externally as it goes forward in the future? So that's how I think about it. Mexico's different than Brazil. Indonesia's different than Malaysia. Nigeria's different than Angola, right? So, you know, we still think there's business out there, but it's going to be very specific, it's going to be very need-based, and you're going to have to earn it as time goes on. Couple more. Yeah. Joe.
It looks like you're expecting about, you know, 4 cents in accelerating deflation next year from a cost perspective. I'm just curious to hear the flip side of the equation. What are you seeing on pricing, especially as oil and gas markets are
I think prices are going to be tougher next year, right? So I think the deflation, we're going to need that kind of deflation to stay and be able to outpace where we see, you know, the potential for pricing to go. So we're trying to create the right target that can offset whatever might happen from a pricing standpoint.
And, Jeff, is there anything you can tell us about your conversations with the regulators on the SIFI de-designation process?
Not a thing.
I had to try.
Thanks for asking. But just you want to do a couple more matters? Everybody getting a tan. It's so warm in here. So that's just fun. Okay, great.
Yeah, Marty Pollack. On the creating supply chain value, interesting, $30 billion of potential opportunities to, again, go more vertical. Can you talk about what is the time frame to really optimize that, and what could its margin contribution be? And actually, if you could take it down to 2020, you know, one of the questions would be, where are margins likely? I mean, we see companies, 3M, others, very strong businesses, margins 20% plus. Obviously, some of your businesses, you know, structurally can't be that. You know, the I guess, energy management side. But talk about that longer-term vision, please.
So here's the way I'd think about it. So I'd start with $30 billion of sourcing on things we design. So start with this is all technology we know. It's all kind of manufacturing processes we tend to know. And then what we do is we take these components and we do what's called a should cost process to it. And we kind of say, okay, what's the difference between what we're paying and what it should cost based on, you know, our analysis of the process? And we kind of look at those and say, okay, now if there's a big enough gap, do we do it ourselves? Do we do a COE? You know, kind of what's the approach? What would it take to invest in that business? What's the returns on those investments and things like that? And I view that as a source of inefficiency that exists in our supply chain today. So I think that's a key contributor to get to the, you know, kind of product margins that I talk about. So, again, I think our margins in 2020 should be higher than they are today. But I look at, you know, we're sitting, let's say in 2000, and let's look backwards. Let's look at 15. Our core margins of 2015 are, let's say, roughly 17% in that neighborhood. And on the product side, we're 300 basis points below what I would consider to be good performance, best-in-class performance. So those are the kinds of opportunities we have across the company, is to whittle away at where are we subpar in terms of what can exist, and that gives us the headroom to continue to push the margins up. But looking backwards is a key part, I think, of especially, you know, guys, look, we sit here with a $300 billion backlog, right? If you're in the aviation business, you've got this immense backlog. We ought to be combing through and seeing where the margin opportunities are. We'll do one more.
Thanks. I just had a couple follow-up questions on GE Digital. So in your Minds Machines conference, I think you mentioned that you could see by 2020 that you have $15 billion in revenue. You didn't explicitly talk about it today, but I was curious if you're still comfortable with that number.
That's still the plan of those three parts. How do you build to that?
Okay, and the follow-up is just, you know, I guess just directionally of that $15 billion, I guess what portion would be incremental service growth versus true software revenue? And the reason I asked that question is I was wondering if, you know, the 50 basis points gross margin improvement guidance that you give, is if that includes, you know, the software revenues, or if that's just
I think the 50 basis points is just kind of core growth, right?
Okay, so any incremental software would be
those margins on the software are all higher than what we have today, right? So, okay, listen, thanks. We've got a couple bars open, so have a great holiday season. Thanks for coming.